The Runaway Asteroid, Chapter 14, The Shield of St. George. The conversation was very quiet, but the microphone picked it up. The words that passed between Lorton Zimbardo and Jean were heard by every pirate on the asteroid. There was complete silence. The pirates' enthusiasm and their complete trust in Zimbardo's leadership was instantly badly damaged. Though no one spoke, many of the men began to doubt their leader's sanity and became afraid. "But, sir," pleaded Jean, "this asteroid is the key to our success. And if we're all its passengers, if you program it to collide with Earth, I..." Words failed him. Zimbardo smiled indulgently. "Jean," he soothed, as if explaining something obvious to a confused child. "I'm not going to cause us to smash into the Earth. We want to control Earth, not destroy it. And how better to do it than from a close orbit around the planet in this magnificent flying craft? I'm taking us to Earth, and there will be plenty of time to adjust our course once we get close. We will accelerate until about midway there, then deaccelerate until we achieve orbital speed. I will, however, inform Earth that I've sent an asteroid more than 40 miles long on a collision course, an asteroid they can't see and can't stop. They will meet any demands I make. They will definitely meet any demands I make after we destroy the 5 atmosphere plants on Mars with pinpoint accuracy. Relax now. In a month or so, we will be the undisputed masters of the third planet, and all without leaving home." He laughed. Jean grinned and also laughed, but while Zimbardo's laugh was deep and genuine, Jean's was a little forced. He was relieved, but his trust in Zimbardo's leadership had suffered a severe setback. Jean was no fool. He looked around and surmised that the majority of those in the room were harboring secret reservations. The Starmen's plan was to head for the nearest SE facility. If Mark's estimate of their position was correct, the facility closest to them was an unmanned Starlight Enterprise station on 0344, a medium-sized asteroid coming their direction. As soon as it was safe to use power, Joe would pilot the alien ship to the station. "We'll be okay in a few hours, Zip," said Joe. "You got us out of the asteroid with food and a ship. We all thought that would be impossible. We ought to be able to turn on the energy and get blasting out of here before too long." "I know," responded Zip with his characteristic furrowed brow. "We're caught between taking a chance on being recaptured by the pirates and depleting the food. We'll run out of supplies in a couple of days." "I know, and the closest base is roughly 4 days away, depending on how speedy this beauty proves to be. But we'll make it." Joe went off to visit with Mark, who was gazing out of the window at the immense spread of the Milky Way. All at once, Mark pointed and cried, "Hey, look at that. Do you see what I see?" Several men came to the window and peered out. Zip Foster joined them. Joe answered, "Yes, the asteroid's moving." The deep bulk of the pirate's asteroid, which had loomed so close to them for 2 days, was gradually but visibly moving away. Its silhouette had been blocking half their view of the asteroid belt and the gleaming array of stars behind it. But now, even as they watched, its profile diminished and stars were winking into view around its edge. "They're heading out somewhere, moving the entire asteroid. I wonder what's going on," asked Mark. "We'll be able to power up before too long now. We'll be on our way ourselves," announced Zip animatedly. "Soon we can get in touch with Starlight. It's been over a week since we've been in contact. We've got a lot to tell them." In 26 minutes, the asteroid was no longer visible to the eye. Zip waited a full 45 minutes, then turned on the ship's power. Zip commanded everyone to prepare for acceleration. Joe ignited the propulsion system. With the lanky Starman at the controls, the alien ship began its journey toward the asteroid belt. As the ship began to cruise easily, Zip said, "Mark, contact SE right away. Fill them in on our recent adventures. Ask Simsalabim to send someone to 0344 with the Star Ranger, and another ship to take St. George and his men back to Ceres, or wherever they want to go." "Got it," said Mark, and began to prepare his report. In less than 5 minutes he'd sent it, but due to the interplanetary distance he didn't expect a response for nearly half an hour. 6 hours and 23 minutes after the destruction of the atmosphere-generating plant on the edge of the Red Sea on Mars, a small iron asteroid struck the plant located just south of the Oxypallas at an open plain about 5 degrees north of the equator. It was a few minutes past 4 a.m. local time. 6 miles away was the settlement of Westcott. The second asteroid followed a near-vertical course and slammed with tremendous force into the ground a half-mile from the atmosphere-generating plant. The sun rose onto a land choked with dust. When the dust settled back to the surface about midday, the people of Westcott saw only a crater 1.5 miles wide. There was no sign that any human artifice had ever existed on the spot. Almost 16 hours later, on an overcast afternoon in the empty northwest, the third asteroid struck. By this time, Zimbardo's message was known all over the planet, and the utter destruction of the first two atmosphere generators had shown that his threat was to be taken seriously. 7 hours and 12 minutes later, the fourth asteroid demolished another atmosphere plant. It was evening, and the resulting cloud of dust created a sunset of spectacular beauty with colors rippling through the drifting sand like fire seen through a translucent curtain. The final impact occurred in the early darkness hours. The atmosphere plant located northeast of Eagle City was instantly turned into rubble.